Welcome to the Grappling Discourse Podcast. Today, I will be doing a deep dive into the PGF. First, though, I tweaked my back again. This is the third time in about 9 months I've tweaked my back. And each time has been due to squats. I've been heavy squatting, put on around 300 pounds each time. On that second rep, I go down. Sharp pain, re-rack, day's done. Re-rack, I'm like, oh, okay. So last week, I re-racked the weight. And I was hoping, I was like, okay, it didn't feel too bad. I don't think it's as bad as last time. I think if I just take the rest of the day off, I'll be good. And I actually felt pretty good that day. I actually rolled that night. I rolled a couple of rounds, felt pretty good. But I was slacking in my stretching. I've been slacking in my recovery stuff. It's just so hard to stay on all the time. It's so hard to do everything you need to do. And been slacking in the stretching. And so I'm assuming my back stayed tight. But for whatever reason, a couple of days ago, me and the guys did some sprints. We did 20 minutes of running. We were probably running about 90%. And one of the things I like to do for cardio is every minute on the minute you run. And in this case, we were doing suicides. And so you had 35 seconds to go down and back four times. And then you had 25 second rest. And each minute you started again. And about that 10th rep, I could just feel I was getting, like, my core was getting really tired. And I'm assuming from all the pivoting, which you have to do a lot of in the suicides, my back got tweaked. And those last, especially that last five, so the last 5 minutes of it, my back hurt. Like, it was the closest I've come to, like, dropping out of a workout, but I didn't. I stayed in the game, which in hindsight might have been dumb. And my back has been inflamed and just not feeling good. And so I didn't train yesterday, didn't train Friday. I've taken a few days off. I think I feel a little bit better today, but it still feels like it's going to be a few days, maybe even another week before I can get back at it. And I just need to be smarter. This is the third time I've heard it doing heavy squats. And there's no need. I don't know why. I mean, I like squatting. And I don't know, I guess I'll just get a little froggy. I spent the past couple of months just really working on the front squat. And I was like, man, I kind of want to see how heavy I can go today. And of course, that has led me into where I am right now, trying to do this podcast in a funny position. If you guys could see me now, I'm sure I look hilarious. I'm in a position that feels good for my back, but I'm just letting you guys know, if you hear movement or if there's some mistakes in this podcast, I apologize. Just know that I am not the most comfortable. And any of you that have dealt with lower back pain or injuries, you know that, like, they're a pain in the ass, and you just never know when you're going to feel a sharp pain. Anyways, deep dive into the PGF. The PGF is coming on its sixth season. And this season, there is a huge jump in talent and prize pool money. And really just, I think, future, if you just look at the future for the PGF, I mean, it looks sky high right now. I think a lot of people are super excited about it. And if this season's successful, I mean, the sky's the limit for the PGF. Now, I've seen a lot of people talking about this season, and people have been trying to kind of guess who's going to win. And I've seen some different ranking lists, and I've been doing some pretty deep research over the past week, getting ready for this podcast. And I actually meant to do this podcast on Friday, but Polaris took place Saturday, and there were a couple of PGF competitors competing. We had Davis Asari, PJ Barch, and Max Hansen. And all three of those guys, I think, are real players to make the postseason and potentially win. And so I wanted to see how they looked before releasing my rankings. And I'm glad I did. But first, I want to talk about the coaches and just really what the ranking, what my rankings are kind of based on, and how I'm viewing this ranking and how I'm looking at each athlete this season. So last season, I was a coach. Now, if I'm being honest, I did very little research going in. I figured the guys that were coming in were huge dark horses, much like past PGF seasons. And each season, there has been a pretty big favorite to win. And in most seasons, it's been Elijah Carlton. First season, I knew Elijah Carlton was going to win. I thought there were a couple of other like pretty good dudes. I wasn't really aware of Matt Elkins. I didn't know Matt very well prior to season one. I'd heard he was a really good grappler. And I think maybe we had rolled one round prior to that. But yeah, I wasn't very aware. Like I didn't know how he was going to do, if he was could have the potential to beat Elijah. And I knew Nilo was also really good. But at the same time, I didn't think he had a shot. And then we had Caleb McAllister jump in, who had a win over Elijah. But talking to Elijah, he was like, look, I was winning that match. Couldn't sub him. And then he beat me in OT. And I'm a lot better. I'm going to crush this guy. And so I was super excited when Caleb jumped in, because without him, I was like, man, Elijah's going to run through it. And even when he jumped in, and after I saw him, and Caleb's a very good black belt, he looked good in season one, but Elijah was just another level. And he proved that by going 24 for 24. He had 24 matches season one and finished all 24 by submission. Insane. I don't care if that's against all blue belts. It was against a mixture of blue, purple, brown, and black belts. And I guess it was also a couple of white belts in there as well. But that's still just absolutely insane. And it's a record that'll never be broken. I mean, they'll never do 24 matches in a season again. I say that. Maybe PGF season 20, they're doing something like that. But yeah, I think that record, the points record, will probably never be broken. Season 2. Season 3, season 4, season 5, all the prior seasons, again, had big favorites going in, except the under 155-pound season. You had guys like Dane Leek, Reese Lefever, The Rock Troll ended up doing very well that season. There were a couple of other guys. David Garcia did very well, but there wasn't really a favorite. And so breaking down that season, it was tough. And I think that season and this season have a lot in common, where while there are some favorites, there's a clear top seven in my mind. Really top five. I think there's five guys this season that can win it all. But I'm not sure. Like, I think any one of those could win it on any given day. And I'm excited to see how it plays out. But yeah, last season I was a coach and I didn't do much research. I've already done way more research this season than I did last season. And this upcoming season, one of the biggest factors is going to be how the coaches decide to draft. And I think it's going to be really interesting because we have four legendary coaches. You've got Eddie Bravo, Hajar Gracie, Andre Galvao, and Hegan Machado. All four of these guys are kind of rock stars in the jiu-jitsu world. And Eddie's a legit rock star. Like, he's the most famous of them all, and he probably has the least amount of accolades. You've got Andre Galvao, who until last ADCC was the GOAT of ADCC until Gordon took that spot. Hajar Gracie, who is pretty much the consensus GOAT of all of jiu-jitsu. Gi and no-gi combined, Hajar Gracie is the GOAT. His jiu-jitsu is timeless, and a lot of the modern stuff we're starting to see, especially from like Gordon Ryan, I think a lot of that stems from Hajar Gracie. Hegan Machado. Hegan medaled at ADCC, was a great competitor in his own right, but he's now more famously known for actually teaching celebrities. He's got a school in Hollywood, and I know he's given like Ashton Kutcher his brown belt. He's worked a lot with like Mel Gibson, pretty sure like Scarlett Johansson, and a handful of other A-list celebrities. And so it'll be pretty cool for those guys to have him around. And who knows, maybe John Wick shows up, because I know he's worked with Keanu Reeves, and maybe John Wick shows up to the PGF finale. That would be pretty insane. Now, these coaches are going to have to do an auction draft, and last season, the auction draft was supposed to be $2,500 for each team. It was going to be real money. The athletes were going to be paid that night. So you had $2,500 to give, and you had to fill five slots. And it was a last second change. And I'm going to assume the Yankees had something to do with this because myself, Nekiah, and Jackson Spry, we're not rich. We don't have a bunch of disposable income. And so we were not trying to spend over and get into that luxury tax. But I heard some rumors, you know, like, hey, you know, you're allowed to go over. And then people were saying like, hey, the Epic Roll guys, they're going to just go all out. They're going to spend as much money as they need to get the guys they want. And that's what they did. So in a normal auction draft, there's a lot of strategy that goes behind it. But when you just have one team that doesn't have a limit to spend, it really takes away a lot of the fun because then they get all the best guys and then you're kind of left, you and the other teams are kind of left picking through the remainder. And while there were still a couple of guys that did very, very well, for the most part, Epic Roll created a juggernaut and it wasn't very competitive. And so they would have won the $20,000. Each one of their team, if it was season six, each one of the Epic Roll guys would have won $20,000. And then Elijah Carlton moved on to the playoffs, won the playoffs, and was last season's champ. He would have won an extra $20,000. But this season, there's a strict salary cap. So you have $2,500 again, but you cannot go over. And if you've never done an auction draft like this, it can be very tricky and it can be really hard to budget. And I've seen so many times because I've been involved in a couple of different fantasy baseball auction drafts and you'll see guys, they're like huge Yankee fans and the best Yankee pitcher comes up and they spend way over what they should for a guy. And then they're kind of screwed on their next few picks because now they can't really go after other good players because they overspent on one. And some guys will get like one or two really good players, but then they're kind of left in a lot of the other positions picking at the bottom of the barrel. Some guys, they miss the star players. And so they're just trying to get the middle rounders. They're trying to get the guys who they think could have good seasons, like could finish near the top, but they're not consensus superstar yet. And I've seen both ideas work, right? I've seen guys do really well, but they get the top player in the draft. They get the Barry Bonds. They get the whoever the best player in baseball is. And then they get another really top guy. And then they take some chances on some young up-and-coming guys. And sometimes those guys, diamonds in the rough. And they way overperform the low price they got them at. And they are a big steal in the draft. Last season, I lucked into getting Landon Torval. I didn't know anything about Landon other than he was a blue belt, and he was one of the last three guys remaining, and I had $300 to spend on two athletes. And so I got Landon Torval, and he way overperformed for the, I think, $100 I spent for him to be on my team. I could see a strategy like that maybe working this season. If you really think that one of these top five, six, seven guys is like the guy, which I think there could be, I think there's one or two that I'm valuing over everybody else, you maybe want to spend a bunch of money, maybe even half your money on that one guy. And then if you think you also can identify somebody, a couple guys in the bottom half of this draft and the bottom 10 that you think are going to outperform, then you could have a winner in your hand. But on the other hand, some of these coaches, they don't really have ties. You know, so when I think about like Eddie Bravo, for instance, he's got a lot of ties going into this upcoming season in that there's a lot of 10th Planet athletes. You've got a bunch of 10th Planet athletes. Eddie's super loyal to 10th Planet. And I just don't think there's any way that Eddie doesn't pick a 10th Planet guy. Unless he just can't because he's spent all his money and people are like spending a lot to get 10th Planet guys like some of these dudes. I think Eddie ends up with all 10th Planet guys. However, Andre Galvao or Keegan Machado or Hoosier Gracie could make Eddie overspend. If they know Eddie wants Ben Eddie because he loves Ben Eddie's game, the rubber guard and everything, they might not want Ben at all and they might make Eddie overspend for Ben. And then Eddie's going to be left trying to fill out two or three spots at the bottom of the draft and he's just not going to have the capital to spend money on some of these other guys. And so I'm excited to see that aspect. Will Eddie remain loyal during the draft? do some of these coaches, like, do they have a guy that they're valuing, or are they going to like spend a bunch on one of these dudes that they think is going to outperform everybody in the field? Does Andre Galvao or Hajar Gracie or even Hegan, do they have any ties to any of these guys? And do they feel like there's one or two guys they have to have on their team? Like Andre Galvao, he's worked a lot with PJ Barr. Like PJ, I know, is trained a bunch at Atos, and him and Andre have a very friendly relationship. But also, Andre Galvao's got one of his guys, Daniel Sadler, who's super talented and I think is going to be he's a really interesting addition to the PGF roster. Is he going to feel like he has to get him? So is he going to try and save money to make sure he gets his guy, his student? Or is he just going to say, no, I'm trying to just make the best team I can. And if I can get my guy, great. But if not, I'm not going to worry too much about it. What about Hodger? We got a Gracie in this. We got Kaiwan Gracie, who's trains out of Hodger's school. Does Hodger feel like he has to get him? Is he going to overspend right there? These are the things that, and we're talking about $20,000 on the line. So if one of these coaches just screws up the draft because they're trying to get their guys, well, they basically screwed everybody on their team because now they're out for making $20,000. You know, last season, all these guys were paid beforehand, but there wasn't any like team bonus for winning. I think Epic Roll did some really cool stuff for their guys. I know they sponsored each of them and gave them a bunch of free stuff, but yeah, it wasn't like the PGF was like, all right, each guy gets an extra $1,000. We're talking about an extra $20,000. Like these guys will get paid each $20,000. So as an athlete, I'd be super nervous about the coaches. Are they going to do their homework? Are there going to be allegiances or alliances? And what team am I going to get? Like, is my team even going to have a shot? Or after day one, are we going to kind of be like, man, we've got no shot because my coach picked like an idiot because he just didn't do any research? And at the end of the day, I was that idiot last season. But in fairness to me, the two guys that I tried to get, I mean, I was in the bidding war for Elijah Carlton and ended up winning the season. I was in the bidding war for Travis Thomas. And I remember people thought I was crazy for trying to get Travis. And there was a couple of guys I kind of heard like whispers, you know, like, oh, I can't believe they spent all that money on Travis. And they didn't know who Travis was. And then at the end of the season, obviously, Travis was the second best guy. And in reality, he actually scored the most points if you take away the team points that Elijah scored. So I feel like I called that pretty well. I mean, I bid over $1,000 on each one of those guys, and I just got outbid. Nakia had more money than me, and obviously the Yankees, you just weren't going to get. If they wanted somebody, you weren't going to get them unless you were willing to come out of your own pocket. And so I finished last. But I like to put an asterisk next to that. But anyways, yeah, one of these guys, like, there's going to be a really bad, like maybe even one or two really bad teams that are just going to get creamed. And I'm excited to see how all that plays out. But how I'm looking and how I'm ranking these guys is, to me, there's two different facets to the PGF. You have the regular season and the postseason. Now, the regular season gets the whole team paid. And so as a coach, like if I was going in as a coach again, I would take this super seriously. I would have a draft board. I would do pretty much what I did, but I would probably even go deeper. I mean, I did watch a bunch of matches, and I'm pretty aware of each guy's game and how I think they'll do. But at the same time, I mean, it's $20,000. There's a lot of responsibility on these coaches. But yeah, I'm going to be ranking these guys based on how many points they get, like how many points I think they get during the season and where they finish during the regular season standings. And I want you guys to know that I think there is one or two guys that if they don't like finish in the top 3 or 4 point getters, I think they have a chance to still win the postseason. And there's one guy in particular who I don't think is going to finish in the top 4, maybe even 5 in the regular season. And so he's maybe a guy I wouldn't spend a lot of money as a coach to get on my team, because I think there's a couple of guys that are going to outscore him by maybe even double digits. But he's a guy that I think could easily win. He might be the best grappler in this thing, and he could easily win the 20K at the finale. Now, I've went back and forth on these top two because in my mind, regular season-wise, there's two guys that really stick out to me. To me, they're the two best guys. And that's PJ Barch and Andy Varela. And I have PJ as number one. PJ is just a little more established than Andy. And he's got more finishes in competition. And PJ, he's just a finisher. And his main weapons are the rear naked chokes and the leg locks. But when you watch some of his performances, particularly the last West Coast Trials, I mean, he started off the run, his West Coast Trials run. He went and won four straight matches by rear naked choke. Now, he ended up losing to Andy Varela. And so that's kind of where I was. Like, man, am I really going to value Andy over PJ, even when Andy has a win over PJ? But if this was an ADCC rule set, I think the rankings would be a little bit different. Not much. I think they would be a little bit different. There's definitely a couple guys near the that I've ranked near the bottom for PGF rule set that you would have to put in the top 10 for sure. And maybe Andy would be number one here, even though PJ went further at ADCC. And again, I just think PJ is a little bit more established than Andy at this point. And PJ went one Polaris this weekend, looked incredible. Three matches against some of the top guys right now. And I was really looking forward to seeing, I was hoping to see PJ versus Max Hansen in the second round, but Max ended up losing a really close match. And then PJ, he won in the finals. He beat Levi Leary Jones, who looked incredible as well. He actually took out Joseph Chen in the other semifinal. But yeah, PJ won $20,000 this weekend. He's already in ADCC. And so I think that's kind of important because I think a lot of these guys are going to be at the ADCC trials. I know Andy's going to be there. And PJ's going to be sitting it out because he's already got an invite because last ADCC championship, he finished in the top four. And PJ's going to be resting up. He just already won $20,000, so he's super confident, I'm sure, after that. He looked great. His wrestling looked great. He had a super slick leg lock in the semifinals. And he just looks ready to go. And the crazy thing about, like, PJ, too, is, like, all his losses are just some of the best guys in the world. Like, he always shows up. He doesn't have any, like, crazy losses. We're like, dude, what happened? Like, PJ lost to this guy. I can't believe he lost to this guy. It's like, no, PJ only has losses to, like, the Mika Gavals and the Cade Rutolos and, like, those guys. And even in his two losses to Cade Rutolo, like, he was winning, in my mind, both those matches. Like, if you go back and watch the CJJ match that Cade and PJ had, it was a few, like 4 years ago now, but PJ was winning the wrestling exchanges, and he actually ended up taking down Cade, passed to side control, and Cade Rutolo started the buggy choke craze. Now, he didn't invent the buggy choke, but when people saw that work against a grappler the caliber of PJ Barch, everyone started looking into it, and then Cade hit a couple of more. And he's kind of like known as like, I mean, that's one of their go-to submissions, the Rutolos. But it all started with PJ Barch. But PJ was winning that match. Like, I've watched that match a few different times, and PJ was getting the better of those exchanges. ADCC, same thing. Now, he ended up getting caught with a super slick armbar by Cade Rutolo in the semifinals of the ADCC championship. But same thing. I felt like PJ was winning those exchanges. And I think Cade's, I mean, obviously he won ADCC gold, beat Mika Gawa on the final. He's one of the top 10 pound for pound grapplers in the world. And PJ's up there, man. He's one of the top 25 guys in the world. He's probably the best pound for pound 10th planet guy, just like overall performances and just what he's been doing for like the longevity that he's been doing it now, that especially Gio's kind of backed away and Boogie have kind of backed away. It's really just Keith Krikorian, who also won Polaris this weekend, and then PJ Barch. So huge weekend for those guys. But yeah, I think PJ is the number one guy, and I feel pretty confident about it. I feel pretty confident about it. And like I said, with the upcoming ADCC trials, I just think a lot of these guys are going to be going to war. Who knows? Do they pick up injuries? Do some of these guys even drop out due to an injury? Like, the West Coast trials is a huge deal for a lot of these dudes. And PJ is going to be sitting on the sideline, recovering and just waiting for PGF. I would be willing to spend, much like Elijah Carlton, like, he's the one guy that I would be willing to spend a lot of money on. Like, I'd be willing to spend almost maybe even up to 50%, but I would definitely be willing to spend 40% of my payroll on PJ Barch. Now, the number two slot, Andy Varela. And Andy is a choke specialist. And Andy's going to do very, very well. I can't imagine a world where Andy doesn't finish in the regular season in the top five. Like, he's going to score points. He's going to take the back and get Renega chokes. And he's got an incredible front headlock. Incredible front headlock. And Andy, he's had some huge wins. He's beaten Tasa. He's beaten J-Rod. He's beaten Davis Asari. He's beaten Cam Hurt, a couple of guys that are in this thing. Like, he's already has wins over him. And he's just a dog. That's the thing I like about Andy Varela. Is of all the guys, like, Andy Varela is a warrior. He's a soldier. He's going to show up. A loss I don't think is going to fail. I think it's just going to fuel him. And there's a couple of these guys I'm going to question if they take a loss, or maybe they start to take two or three. The losses stop mounting up. I've seen the PGF break a lot of dudes. And the PGF will not break Andy Varela. Andy Varela, from what I've seen in the training room, what I've seen of him in competition, he's a go-getter. I mean, he's one of those dudes, like, he's willing to take a match with anybody. Submission Underground, Sean Strickland, who's an absolutely insane person. Like, you see that flying, he jumped, flying, jumping RNC on Sean Strickland. He's had matches with Nicky Rod. He's fought Big Dan. He's fought Luke Griffith. Like, weight doesn't matter to Andy. Andy is super hungry. He probably trains harder than everybody on this list. Like, he's always going after it. He's in a room full of killers. I just think he is, even though he has no PGF experience, I think he and his mindset is PGF ready. And he's a guy that I would want on my team. So if I'd missed out on PJ Barch, Andy would be the number two guy, and I think Andy is going to have a phenomenal season. He's definitely a player to finish, to win, to be one of the guys that helps your team win. And I think he also could easily win that postseason. He could walk away with $40,000. Now, I'm interested to see how Andy looks at West Coast Trials. And look, I think one of the things I've learned in the past year is that one performance that's like one weekend doesn't define your grappling, right? But I still like the idea of like PJ Barch coming off a huge win in Polaris. Like, that's a guy I'd want just confidence wise. He just beat a couple of the best guys in the world already. He just walked away with $20,000. He knows what that feels like. He's been under that pressure. I'd want him to be a leader of my team. I'd want to see Andy go out and have, and I think he's going to have a phenomenal. I could easily see him winning West Coast Trials. But regardless, he's a guy you got to spend money on. I think they're the top two dudes. I think they're the two guys that I think one of those guys, like, their team is going to win. I have a hard time, like, if you don't get PJ Barch and you don't get Andy Varela, I have a hard time seeing your team win unless the coach just, he gets them, spends too much money, and then picks terribly the rest of the way. But I think the winning team has one of those guys on it. And there's certain times, like in fantasy, if you've ever played fantasy football, fantasy baseball, sometimes a guy performs so well, like, it's hard to make up. Like, whoever has him on his team, like, that guy can make up for, you know, your other running back, your backup running back playing, and he scores only like a couple of points. Well, Christian McCaffrey or some of these other guys, like Priest Holmes or LaDainian Thomas, some of those guys had weeks where they like made up for even a bad quarterback performance. They made up for like two or three guys, and you could win just riding them. And I could see PJ and Andy doing that. Like, you got a guy, the last guy you got on your team, or maybe even the last two guys got on your team. Each day, Andy and PJ are performing, and they're picking up where those guys, you know, aren't scoring, but they're doing so well that, like, it almost doesn't matter. So that's my like one and two. Like, those are the clear two. And then the next group of guys. So at number three, there was also some decision. Like, one and two was pretty clear for me. Three, four, five, six, seven. Like, man, I went back and forth on this a lot. For me, I think number three, I would have to go with Max Hansen. And the reason I'm going Max Hansen, I feel like it's between him and Kieran Kuchuk. Those are the two dudes that I'm looking at. Like, three, Max, four, Kieran. The reason I've got Max over Kieran is because I think, much like Andy, Max isn't going, like, if he does have a poor match or he does have like a bad day, like, he's going to be able to bounce back. He lost to Daniel Sadler, who I actually have ranked lower than Max Hansen. Like he lost by submission on a big event, a WNO. And he lost in style. Like he got highlighted. And he's even posted about this. He's like, man, it was one of the most embarrassing performances of my life. I get this huge opportunity. I think it was his first time on WNO, which is Flow Grappling's big promotion. And he gets submitted in under 2 minutes by a flying armbar. Pulls guard, Daniel jumps into a triangle, switches it into an armbar, and submits him. One of the best subs of the year so far. Well, Max Hansen, like many guys, like if that would have happened to me, I probably wouldn't have competed for a year. Because mentally, that would have maybe broke me. I'm being honest. Max Hansen, though, 2 weeks later, short notice, gets a call to go out to Enigma and fill in for a guy and compete for at 185 pounds, which is two weight classes above what he competes at like normally. Like normally I'd say Max Hansen's a 55. He's won a lot at 70, but I've never seen him at 85. And this 85 bracket was super stacked. A bunch of really good dudes, and he wins the whole thing. And just the mental fortitude that it takes, like bounce back from that 2 weeks later, no excuses, go out there short notice, go up a couple of weight classes, dominate and beat Oliver Taza. And in the finals, you have to beat Oliver Taza. Beats Oliver Taza. I just love this kid's mindset. He's a finisher. So he's got 49 wins at black belt, and 37 of those are by sub. 37. And now a lot of his submissions are leg locks. And so I can see him getting breaks. But this season, I think just any points you can get are going to be important. There's definitely a couple of guys on here. I think you're like a guy like Max, like, hey, we need you to go out in the first three, 4 minutes. First 3 minutes, especially if the six-minute match, pass, take the back, and let's see if we can get that choke. He's phenomenal on the back. But he's a guy like, hey, 2 minutes left. We need some points. He can easily get on a leg and break it. One of the best leg lockers of this season. But it's more, again, like there's a couple of these dudes that I'm kind of worried about. Like if they start having poor performances, do they kind of mentally check out? Do they start going through the motions? Are they going to start playing it too safe? And Max is a guy, each match, I know what I'm going to get. He's going to go out there, go for the kill. He's going to be a great leader for my team if I miss out on Andy and PJ. In a perfect world, I'd get PJ and Andy and Max. But if I didn't get either one of those guys, I would want Max Hansen on my team. He's a guy that I think a lot of guys are going to get strength from, and he is a phenomenal grappler, and he definitely has a chance to win this whole thing. Now, Kieran Kuchik's coming out of B-team. And Kieran and Max, I watched them. They had a match a couple of months ago, and they've had a couple of matches. I believe they met at a quintet that was held. It was like between the promotions. But Max has a win over Kieran, and that match ended up in a draw. This last one, most recent one, and I feel like Kieran beat Max pretty good in that match. But I still went Max over Kieran. Anyways, Kieran Kuchik is a guy that is going to score very, very well. I have a hard time. He's one of those guys. Like I actually have a hard time in seeing him win the postseason. Like I don't really think he's a player to win the end of the season tournament. But he's going to rack up a lot of points, and I think he's going to finish in the top five for point getters. Kieran's super dangerous. He and Max are probably the two best leg lockers this season. Kieran's also super good at triangles, and when I looked at like his record, right? So Kieran has 82 wins at black belt, 82 wins, and 61 of them are by submission. And he's very balanced. Like if you look at the submission breakdowns, it's like half of them are chokes and half of them are breaks. And I just love seeing that, you know. And with Kieran, it's like there's going to be some of these guys, you know, you're going to go, hey, like we need some points. And you're going to be able to send Kieran out. And I think kind of game plan like what you want to see out of him. Like, hey, all we need for today to win our team points is just go out there and get a break. And he can go out there and get those quick submissions. But at the same time, you know, he can play the dilemmas, and his triangle choke is what really is like. We've seen Elijah Carlton have tons of success. I'm going to talk about Elijah here in a minute. We've seen him have tons of success with triangles over the years in the PGF. And Kieran Kuchik's got a very similar guard and very similar attacks to Elijah. Kieran's just done it at a little bit higher level than Elijah. Karen's just a little bit more. I mean, you just look at like his black belt record. I mean, he's got 82 wins and 61 of them by submission. Now, the other big reason that I put Kieran below Max is that Kieran has lost, though. So he has 22 losses at black belt, and 10 of them are by submission. And so I feel like he will give up more points than Max Hansen. Like, Max has 8 losses at black belt, but only 2 of them by submission. And just from what I've seen, like, yeah, like, Max seems to be very, 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 very difficult to put away. And Kieran, again, there has been a few times, like, I just think about that Nicky Ryan match. Obviously, it's Nicky Ryan, one of the best dudes in the world, but Nicky got onto him pretty easily and ended up getting the finish. And I've seen a couple of other times. I've seen Keith Krikorian tap Kieran. I think some of these guys can maybe counter leg lock Kieran or maybe get to his back, but that is the one thing. I think defensively, he's going to give up more points than Max Hansen. 5. This is where I have Hanato Kanuto. And Hanato Kanuto is better than Kieran Kuchik and Max Hansen. Hanato Kanuto is arguably the best guy in this season, grappling overall. He's phenomenal. He has a win over PJ Barch a long time ago at an event called, what was that event called? It was in New York. I'm blanking on it right now. But anyways, he has a win over PJ Barch. It was a 1-0 victory. Now, here's the thing. If you haven't seen Hanato Kanuto's matches are, there's always one moment, sometimes more, in the match where you just see him do something and you go, I could never do, like, that was incredible. But Hanato Kanuto's not a finisher. He's got 66 wins at black belt, and 19 of them are by submission. And so I put Hanato Kanuto at 5 because I'm banking on Hanato Kanuto's just overall grappling ability, and I think he can submit some of these guys at the bottom. But I definitely wouldn't overspend on Hanato. Like, I would have in my mind a number for Hanato, and if it went over that, even if I'd missed out on those first 4 dudes, which I think would be pretty impossible at this point, but even if I'd missed out, I might let him pass during the regular season. But I have him at 5 because I think he could easily win the postseason. Hanato Kanuto, Andy Varela, PJ Barch are probably the 3 favorites. But will Hanato make it into the final 8? I think there's even a chance that Hanato doesn't have enough points. Like, he doesn't finish in the top 8. I could see that. He plays very cagey, and I think Hanato is one of those guys that could get penalized due to the stalling calls. Because Hanato plays sometimes at the edge of the mat. He tries to set up like some crazy like backflip passes or cartwheel passes, and he'll kind of play on the edge, and then try and do something really explosive. And I can see Brandon penalizing him for that. And so I put Hanato Kanuto at 5 because the talent's there, and again, the overall grappling's there. He's absolutely phenomenal. But he's a guy that I would probably pass on. I can easily see Elijah Carlton scoring more points than Hanato Kanuto. I could even see like Kevin Buehring scoring more points than Hanato Kanuto. But at the same time, the ceiling is so high for Hanato Kanuto. If I'd missed out on those other 4 guys, I'd be like, man, like Hanato Kanuto could beat PJ Barch. He could beat, like, he's already beaten PJ once. He could beat Andy Varela. He could beat any one of these dudes. I'm just going to have to take a risk on the talent and hope he delivers during the season and scores enough points. And I guess the biggest thing for me, like, as his coach, especially if my team was out of, like, Hanato, we got to make sure you get into the finale because you could win that thing. And we need to make sure that you're in it. But I have Hanato at 5. 6. At number 6, I have Davis Asari. Now, Davis is coming off of a pretty bad weekend at Polaris, and he didn't even get to compete. So Davis missed weight by a couple of kilos from what I heard. And anytime an athlete misses weight, like, that's a pretty big deal. And promoters aren't happy, fans aren't happy, and he's just probably trying to cut too much weight. This tournament was at 170 pounds, so he will have an extra 5 because this PGF season's at 175, and so I can't imagine that 175 would be a problem. But I am a little bit worried for Davis. Now, this is day before weigh-ins. They only have to weigh in one time. And so I'm not too concerned. But you know, if Davis makes weight and everything, as a coach, I would love to get this kid because he has been on fire recently, particularly at the European trials. He almost won. He made it to the finals. He beat Oliver Taza, his teammate, who's one of the best dudes in the world. And I was actually looking up Oliver Taza, and I've been watching a bunch of Oliver Taza matches over the past week. And just because a lot of these guys have faced Oliver Taza, it's a very similar opponent because Oliver Taza has had like a couple hundred matches at black belt. And yeah, he's faced Andy, he's faced PJ, he's faced Davis, he's faced so many of these dudes. But anyways, Davis has a very recent win at the European trials over Oliver Taza. He ended up losing in the final to Tommy Langacker. He and Elijah Carlton are 1-1, but this, the most recent win was by Davis Asari. And I definitely think Davis and Elijah are right there, right? I could see Elijah for sure scoring more points than Davis. I could see Davis for sure scoring more points than Elijah. I'm starting to enter into the phase of the next four or five guys are guys that I'm not too sure on. Like, I think any one of these dudes could finish sixth, seventh, eighth. But I think these are the guys that are going to be rounding out that final three spots for the tournament. And I have Davis here, but like I said, I need to see him make weight. I need to see him make weight. After he makes weight, I'll feel pretty confident in him. He's been competing probably more than anybody, honestly. I mean, he's hit every ADCC Open. He's competed at multiple ADCC trials already. He is obviously out of New Wave, and so he's coming from one of the best teams. And when I see guys coming from New Wave, I believe in the development there. And so the grappler that Davis was 6 months ago, I know he's going to be so much better. Like, each time you see him, he gets better. And he, again, looked incredible at the last trials. And I'm banking that a couple months more training in that room, he's going to be even better. And so I'm buying into the Donahue New Wave hype. I'm buying into Davis. I think Davis is a real dark horse, and he could maybe win the season. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if Davis ended up winning the season. I mean, who knows? I definitely think he's like a huge underdog, but he might be a guy worth sprinkling like $100 on if you're like, hey, I believe in this prospect. And as a coach, I feel pretty confident. I actually feel more confident in Davis than Hinato. But I do feel like Hinato's ceiling is a little bit higher than Davis. Seven, I have Daniel Sadler. Daniel Sadler is coming off of that huge win at WNO. He's a pretty young black belt. He has 25 wins, 14 of them by submission. So that's a really good, 25 wins, 14 of them by submission. Like, he is a submission artist. Any time an athlete has more than a 50% winning percentage by submission, like, they go after it. Like, they are submission hunters. And so I'm really excited. I know that Atos had a couple of different guys at this weight class that they could have put into the tournament, but Andre Galval elected to put Daniel Sadler, and I think that says a lot about him. And from the matches I've watched of Daniel, like, he's an incredible athlete. Obviously, with that win over Max Hansen at WNO, we've seen the flair. We've seen his ability to just fly onto a submission. But he's got a few leg lock wins as well. And while Atos isn't known for leg locks, and I definitely don't think he's going to be a better leg locker than like Elijah or Kevin Buehring, Daniel, I think Daniel's going to have a really good season. I could see Daniel being very, very of his losses. He doesn't have a lot of losses at black belt, but he only has one sub by a submission loss. And so I think he will be very difficult. Like, he'll be a guy on your team that gives up very few points throughout the season. And in a season where I think it's going to be really hard to score, you want to make sure the guys on your team aren't giving up sixes, right? You want to make sure every single dude on your team isn't giving up sixes. Because just a couple of sixes could be the difference between your team walking home, each guy with $20,000, and somebody else.
And so that's like one of the big reasons that I have Daniel Sather ranked above the next couple of guys, is just because I think he's a submission artist, very dynamic grappler coming out of one of the best camps in the world, and he's phenomenally sound on defense. He's had a couple of matches with Max Hansen, who's one of the best sub guys in the world, and he's beaten him both times. I believe the hype. I believe in Daniel Sather. He is also another guy that I, much like Davis Cesari, like I would have a fixed number, and I might even overspend to get Daniel Sather. Like I might, if I'd missed out on Andy and PJ, and I'd picked up, let's say, Max Hansen, I would want to get Daniel Sather on that same team. Like, all right, let me see if I can get Max. Let me see if I can get Daniel. That would be a strategy that I would like maybe try. Now, it's going to be really tough because he is Andre Garvel's guy. So I could see getting into a bidding war with Andre Garvel and trying to get Andre to overpay for him. But I think Daniel's going to have a great season, and I think he'll definitely be one of the dudes that are in the postseason in that final eight. The number eight spot. So 8, 9, and 10, and 11 are kind of like the last guys that I think are real players to make the playoffs. And so I look at this as like the top 11 and then the rest, right? I think the guys after the 11th spot, so after I name these last couple of guys, the rest of the list, really, I don't give them much of a chance to make the playoffs. Now, it doesn't mean they can't have good seasons. And a good season for somebody like Jamie Carnell is going to look a lot different than, obviously, like a PJ Barch. And I'm not saying these guys can't get big upsets. That's one of the cool things about the PGF or over the course of the season is almost every single person, like there's usually one guy that just has a shit season. He doesn't win. He basically walks home as the last place guy. But everybody else, they usually even get like one huge upset or a couple of big highlights. And yeah, so I think after I'm going to talk about the 8, 9, 10, and 11 spot, and then 12 to 20, they're guys that I'm like, man, if they make the playoffs, like that'll be humongous for them, because I just can't see their path there. On that 8th spot, I do have John Combs. And now John Combs is tricky, because John Combs is an absolute killer. He's a guy that is 100% going to get a couple chokes. He has one of the best guillotines in the world. He will have two or more chokes. So that's pretty good. We're talking about 12, possibly even 18 points. If he just finishes three of his 12 matches, where if you look at his black belt record and how many matches he's had, that should be almost a guaranteed. But John Combs has 111 wins at black belt, and 82 of them are by submission, and almost all of them are chokes. If you look at it, I think he had like 18 guillotines, 14 rear naked chokes, 8 Armin guillotines. Like, he is a guillotine master. He is a choke master. And he's a guy that I would be targeting as my second or third round pick, and I would be willing to spend more on John Combs. I would probably be willing to spend a little bit more on John than maybe a Daniel Sather. But John Combs, I think, has zero shot to win the tournament. Like, John Combs to me is he's a proven commodity. There's some of these guys that I'm going to talk about here in a second that are like dark horses and they're prospects. So it's going to be really tough. Like, I think this is where they'll finish, but if they outperform that, I won't be shocked. And if they underperform, I won't be shocked. But John Combs, he's making the playoffs. He'll be in that 6th, 7th, or 8th slot. He's going to get a couple of chokes, but he's going to look like he gets submitted a lot. So of all the guys on this list, like at black belt, like of the big names, I mean, John Combs has 39 submission losses. That's a lot. That's a lot. And it shows you a lot about him. Like, he goes after in all of his matches. He doesn't play it safe. But at the same time, that's a lot of submissions, and I think he will give ups, particularly in the leg locks. He has a huge weakness in leg locks, and there's a lot of really good leg lockers this season, and so I think some of these guys like Davis Asari, PJ Barch, Kieran Kuchuk, Max Hansen, Elijah Carlton, Kevin Buehring, I could see them for sure getting a pretty easy victory over John Combs if they can get into his legs. But at the same time, if John grabs any of one of these dudes' heads, they could be dead. And so he's a guy that, again, I would want on my team, like super experienced, probably the most experienced out of everybody, like him and PJ and yeah, Hinata are probably the three most experienced guys. But John's probably had the most matches of all these dudes. He's got the most submission victories at black belt of all these dudes. And I know when he gets a submission, it's going to be a choke. As a coach, that's tough to pass up on. So I'm going to be really fascinated to see which coach tries to get John Combs. At 9 and 10, I have the Atlanta products, Elijah Carlton and Kevin Buehring. Now, Kevin Buehring and some of the other rankings has been pretty low. And I understand. Kevin Buehring is a prospect. He hasn't been training jiu-jitsu that long. He does have a win over Max Hansen, but it was an EBIOT. And so while EBIOT, like, impressive, obviously, is a purple belt to beat one of the best dudes on the scene right now. A lot of people, they don't really know about that. They don't really know who Kevin is. They think of him as just a leg locker. But I will tell you this. Kevin Buehring is an absolute stud. And then at the spot just above him is Elijah Carlton. And I'm going to be fascinated. In my dream world, these guys end up on opposite teams and they go against each other. Because I've always heard, like, Elijah has talked so much about how awesome Kevin is and how much trouble Kevin gives him in the training room. I just would like to see that match. Little teammate on teammate. But I think both these guys have a shot to, like, get a couple of big upset wins. I could see them getting and beating somebody, like, who knows, maybe they get, maybe, see, Canuto, though, he's so tough. Like, I look at some of the names above him, though, and I just have a hard time believing, like, Canuto's had matches with Gary Tone and Nicky Ryan, and they couldn't leg lock him. Can Elijah, can Kevin find their way into, like, a guy like Kanato Canuto's legs? I don't know. Canuto is super, super tough, right? Elijah's submitted Davis Asari. Like, I would love to see them run it back, obviously. I think a lot of people are looking at that. But yeah, when I look above, you know, and John Combs had a match with Elijah, and John beat Elijah. These guys are definitely capable of making the playoffs. And to me, if they do, this will be a huge, 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 huge season for them. And I know Elijah, he's been kind of talking a lot to the people that have ranked him below, you know. It's funny, one of the guys ranked Elijah first, and Elijah's like, yeah, of course, that's where I should be. But then a couple people have ranked him as low as 7, and I actually have him at 9. So I know Elijah will probably flame on me hard for this. But I think 9, and especially what he's capable of doing this season, he's going to have a good season. He's going to get a couple of huge wins. He's going to get his highlights, but he just isn't established, and he hasn't ever really won the big one. He's won the regional shows. He's won a ton of regional shows. But Elijah has yet to win, like, a big national show. And so that's kind of my big mark on Elijah, is he just doesn't have the history of going out there and winning the big ones. I get it. He's won some PGFs. But remember, the PGF prior to this season was just a regional show. This season, I mean, every single one of these dudes, I mean, we've got some previous champions that I don't even have in the top 15. We have an ADCC silver medalist that's not ranked in the top 10. That's how talented this season is. There's a Gracie that isn't ranked in the top 10. And so for Elijah and Kevin to be 9 and 10, to me, that's like huge. You know, they're up-and-coming guys. I know Elijah's been on the scene quite a while now, but Kevin's definitely young, and Elijah's still young. Tons of potential. They're training out of one of the best teams, one of the best upcoming teams in the country. If you told me that Elijah finished in the top 5, I would be pretty shocked. Like I said, a top 5 is pretty set in my mind. But he definitely can make the playoffs. He definitely is going to get a huge upset victory. He's going to have a great season, and he's going to provide a lot of interesting moments. And I'm excited to see how Elijah plays this season, especially if he isn't the top dog. Like, let's say after day one, he didn't. What if he doesn't get, if he has really tough matches, and after day one, he has 0 points? I'm a little bit worried about Elijah, like the mental of Elijah, because he has been on top of every season. After every single day, he's used to seeing his name in the 1 or 2 spot. it was either one or two. But what if he finds himself in the 12th spot after day one? What after day two, he finds himself in the middle of the pack? How will the mental and the mental fortitude of Elijah, like, will he be able to pick it up? Will he be able to stay motivated? Will he still be able to stay hungry? I don't know. And that's my big question as like a coach. If I was like looking at the board and like, okay, Elijah Carlton's up. Like, I know Elijah can perform and I've seen it. He has the most experience. He's the face of the PGF. But at the same time, those would be the questions I'd have of him. And so for me, the safe spot would be the 9 spot. I'd love to get him on a team with like Andy Varela. So if I got like Andy Varela, if I get a pickup, maybe like a Daniel Sadler, who's super tough defensively, also super dynamic and has a couple wins over Max Sanson. If I could like pair those three together, I would be super, super, super happy. Kevin Buehring. To me, this is like the bet. And I've heard some people talking. They're like, who's going to finish higher, Elijah or Kevin? And I've heard people say Kevin's going to finish higher than Elijah. And I've heard people say Elijah's going to finish higher than Kevin. I personally believe a little bit more in Elijah. Both are incredible, like national level grapplers. Kevin, the ceiling, I mean, I've probably given more love to Kevin Buehring than anybody. I've called a bunch of his matches on the PGF. I've given him love on this podcast, and I do think he is the future. But I wonder where he's at. Kevin has, he's never won the big one as well. He does have that one big win over Max Hansen. But I'm wondering, will Kevin kind of have a elbow genie season? Like, if he does get victories, will they be joint locks? Now, any victory this season is huge. But I do wonder about, like, I could see him getting more submissions than John Colmes and even beating John Colmes. But John Colmes is going to be getting those guillotines. And if Kevin's just getting leg locks and John just gets three, if he gets three chokes and Kevin, it's going to take five. No, it's going to take 6 joint locks, double the chokes just for him to be tied with John Colmes. And so that's like my one thing. In those 6 minutes, and I can see Kevin for sure making the playoffs. I definitely see a world where he's in that 7 or 8 spot. But I think I value Elijah because I think Elijah's a little bit better at chokes than Kevin. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. To me, the most exciting thing about this season is Kevin Buehring. Like, he's the guy I've got like a big star on. Like, I want to see all Kevin's matches. I'm rooting for Kevin. I love watching the purple belts or the underdogs go against the top dudes. And so, yeah, when it's Kevin Buehring versus like AJ Agazarim, I'm like, that's a match I have to, like, I want to see. I want to see Kevin get his shot against an ADC silver medalist. I think he can beat AJ 100%. I have him ranked higher than AJ. He and my number 11 guy, Jet Thompson, are the two dark horses, the two young guns, the two dudes that as an upper belt I wouldn't want to face. I want nothing to do with either one of those young studs. Jet Thompson is an absolute maniac. He's a lot like some of the past PGF guys, just even more talented. Like, he's on the national level, and he's some huge wins. He's a couple wins over Ben Eddy, and I know through the grapevine, some of these guys, when they're asking like to see the list and see who all was in it, when they saw his name on there, like, oh, that kid is super tough, or I've competed against that kid, or I know who that kid is. He's super, super dangerous. But he's a young guy, much like Kevin Buehring. I believe Jet's still a teenager, though, where Kevin's like 20, 21. But two young, hungry purple belts that are going to have really good seasons. They're going to be really tough to break. They're going to surprise a lot of people. And I would want one of those on my team. If I couldn't get Kevin Buehring, I'd want Jet Thompson. We've seen the young guns, the young and upcoming guys do really, really well. And I think, like, much like a Matthew Boyle, like, Jet Thompson's going to be a fan favorite. People are going to fall in love with this kid by the end of the season. He's going to get a lot of fans. But neither guy, again, they haven't, like, really broke out. Like, they're not established. They're not. And so if either one of them makes the playoffs, I mean, that's a humongous deal. Humongous deal. Now, the 12 on, any of these guys, like, I have a really hard time imagining them making the playoffs, but anything can happen. And like I said, the odds that one of these guys beats one of the favorites, like, it happens all the time. We've seen so many upsets in PGF history. These guys could easily provide the next viral moment. But I've got Mike John at number 12. Mike's a dude, when we start getting near the bottom, like when we start getting past that 10 mark, like, I would want Mike John. Mike John is a phenomenal competitor. He has competed on big stages before. He competes a lot, and he's very good at chokes. And he looked amazing in the PGF qualifier. He dominated the PGF qualifier. And Mike John's a dude that, if Eddie Bravo wasn't in there, I think he would go really under the radar. I think I could get him for super cheap. And I think he's a guy that could send Eddie's team over the top, because I could see a lot of the other coaches not really knowing who Mike John is. Like, Ben Eddy's a much bigger name than Mike John, in my opinion. But I'd want Mike on my team over Ben, I think, at this point in their careers. Now, I do have Ben Eddy at number 13. Ben is for sure going to have a couple of highlights. He's going to get a Hindulo team, 6 points. He's going to do some crazy rubber guard thing. He's going, he's really hard to submit. He's got a really good guard. Now, I have seen Ben struggle a bit lately, and so I'd feel more confident picking Mike John than Ben. Like, I would probably, like, hey, I've got a couple $100 to spend for my fourth pick. I would love to get Mike John. I would feel less comfortable with Ben, but I know Ben has performed on huge stages. He's got some really big wins, and he's capable of bringing your team over. Like, he's a winner, and he's a guy that could easily put your team over the top to win that $20,000. At number 14, I have Gracie. I have Kaiwon Gracie. And the initial PGF rankings that the PGF World released, they had Kaiwon at number 3. And I've watched the footage. I've watched the competition matches from Kaiwon. I watched his two MMA fights, and I just don't see it. I can't imagine him getting into the postseason. Now, he's a very good grappler, really good fundamentals. He's coming out of Hajar Gracie's camp, so I can't imagine Hajar not spending the money to get him onto his team. So I think he's going to be pretty much, like, guaranteed to be on Kaiwon, and I think most drafts are going to have Kaiwon in the top 8. But he's a guy I would happily pass on. I would try and make maybe Hajar or somebody else spend a little bit more than they wanted to, and I would pass him up. Just the traditional guys haven't done well in the PGF. Anytime we see a guy coming from a more traditional background, they haven't done well. The matches that I've seen from Kaiwon, he's not, like, really a submission hunter or submission artist. He has a slower-paced game. He plays a lot of, like, close guard. He's just more traditional. And so I think some of these other young guys, like, I would 100% want Kevin Buehring over Kaiwon Gracie. AJ Agazarin, much of the same fold. Like, both good grapplers, and I have AJ at 15. But AJ's not a finisher. He's a guy I wouldn't want on my team. Now, I think AJ's a great grappler. He's obviously a silver medalist at ADCC. He has some of the most fun matches that you could ever watch. But I think we're going to see a meltdown from AJ. I think we could see AJ check out mentally. After day one, if he hasn't scored any points, and then he's going to get into some altercation with somebody. It just always happens with AJ. I just wouldn't want to deal with it as a coach. So I don't think he's going to score points. I don't want to really deal with the personality. I think he's going to kind of, you know, he's kind of being brought on to be the heel, and I just wouldn't want to deal with it. And so unless I just had one spot and he was the only guy left, like, I wouldn't spend on AJ, even though he is a great grappler. He's going to have a couple of the best matches from the season, most exciting. I would love to see him versus Jet Thompson and Kevin Buehring in particular, just to see the young guns get a shot at the ADCC medalist. AJ is incredibly hard to submit. He's basically almost impossible to submit. PJ does have an RNC victory over him from that West Coast Trials, but yeah, I just, as a coach, I'm passing on AJ. I would much rather have one of these next two dudes. And so, in an ideal world, I'd be rounding out my team with either Nathan Haddad or David Evers. I got Nathan at 16, David Evers at 17. David at 17, he is built in just the craziest way. Like, he has no limbs. He's already won a season, but here's the thing. He's not very active competition-wise. I haven't really seen much from him since he left. So he used to train at 10th Planet Huntsville, but he moved back to Texas. And I saw him, like, he competed the other day. Brandon tagged me in it, and he finished like a goozle on a guy. But I still, like, David's a very, very good regional level black belt. Like, I don't know if he's a black belt yet. He still might be a brown belt, but he's a black belt. Like, he's a very, very, very good grappler. But I can't imagine him scoring enough points because it's mainly going to be leg locks. I don't see him scoring enough points to make the top eight, but he will get a couple of finishes. David Evers will 100% get a couple submissions. He's also incredibly hard to submit. I don't think anybody, actually, I take that back. I think Dane Leak submitted David Evers. I think he was the only person that season to submit him. But yeah, he's still very, very, very tough to submit. I could see him getting some draws with some guys, but he's also going to put some points on the board. I think of like the final, like bottom five guys, I would love to round my team out with either him or the guy right above him, Nathan. Nathan's coming out of Helios Seneca School in Louisville, Kentucky. And now he's mainly an IBJJF guy, but he has done pretty well at some ADCC trials. He's a really, really tough black belt. He's long, lanky. He's a really good grappler. But I have him just above David. I think he's a little bit better than Jamie. I think he's a little bit better than Samson. And then I have Cam Hurt at 20. Now, those bottom three guys, Jamie, Samson, and Cam Hurt, I think are going to have a really tough time this season. Jamie had a good showing in the qualifier. He ended up beating Samson. Samson's just undersized. Like, he is not a 175er. I mean, he competed at the 155-pound season. Samson's a very good black belt. He's a good grappler, but he is undersized. He didn't win the qualifier, and so you have to put him down here. And then Cam Hurd, he's one of my last guys. I mean, Cam struggled to score points last season. And there were some dudes in the last season who were, I mean, they were kind of dudes that train two or three times a week. And while Cam's a great grappler, he's a Division I collegiate level wrestler, but he's not a submission artist. And again, he didn't score points last season. And looking at this lineup, I don't see who he beats. Now, yeah, he's going to have a couple of exciting matches. Like, him and Ajax Azarin will be a barn burner. I mean, they'll be slapping each other and, you know, diving off the mats, and it'll be a crazy one. But I just, Cam's not going to score a lot of points. And with the way this is set up, where we have five guys on the team, you want to try to avoid, you want to have guys that are scoring points and not getting subbed. And I just think Cam and Jamie and Samson are going to have a really tough time. And so one of my goals would be to end up with try and end up with, like, in a perfect draft, I would have PJ Barch. I would get either Kieran Kuchik and Max Hansen. If I missed out on them, I would try and get like Daniel Sadler and Elijah or Kevin Buring, maybe even John Combs in there. Then I would try and pick up Jet or Mike John, and I would try to round it out with David Evers or Nathan Haddad. That'd be kind of like my ideal draft. If I missed on PJ and I missed on Andy, then I would really try to get Max and Kieran back to back, and then try and get maybe like Elijah and Kevin Buring as well, and then maybe like a Jet Thompson. Hopefully the other guys that spent a lot of money on the other, like Hanado Canuto. Like, I think Hanado Canuto is going to go for a lot. I think Andy's going to go for a lot. I think PJ is going to go for a lot. I'd hope I could sneak in a Kieran or a Max for cheaper than they want to go, and then get John, Elijah, and Kevin, like two of those three, and then round it out with like a Jet, Mike John, Nathan, and David Evers. Something in that combination. But it's going to be super interesting. Now, the playoffs, 10-minute EBI matches. But one of the big differences is that if there are stalling calls, if you get two or three, I can't remember if it's two or three stalling calls in the match, and you don't go to overtime, and your opponent is the victor. And so I could see maybe a guy like Kanata Canuto. he's going to have a tough time with that because they're going to call very stingy stalling penalties. And like I said, he kind of dances on the edge of the mat. But Andy, PJ, Hanato Canuto, Davis, Max Hansen, I think those are the five that can win the finale. One of those five will be the PGF Season 6 champion. I'm picking, I gotta go with either PJ or Andy. I'm going to go with PJ. But yeah, any one of those five, going to win the postseason. And then you guys heard my top 20, how I would rank them as, like, if I was drafting them. And you kind of heard my draft strategy as well. Make sure you guys tune in to the PGF. It's going to be all week long. They're going to be doing it in Vegas. It's going to be big. It's going to be the best season ever. A lot of money is going to be given out. And I think we're going to see some crazy matches. Till next time, guys. I love and appreciate you. Peace.